The Green Bay Packers are trying their best to put the loss to the Broncos behind them, but things don't get any easier. Facing an undefeated team on the road for the second consecutive week when they travel to Carolina to take on the Panthers. To preview Sunday's game, we'll be joined by Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for a game this weekend against the Carolina Panthers, the undefeated Carolina Panthers. That feels weird just to say that. But to help preview the game, we have a guest joining us on the phone today.
Expert interview.
We have Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog making his monthly appearance on the show. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Brian. How are you doing, man?
Very good, very good. We're glad to have you as always. Our audience has suffered enough probably from the Broncos game, so we don't want to linger on last week's loss to the Denver Broncos, but you were inside the stadium, so I do want to get your impressions from the game. If you just, you know, maybe briefly, we'll spend more time previewing the upcoming game rather than reliving the loss, but I definitely want to get your off-the-cuff impressions, if you would.
It was an electric environment. It was, very Packer-friendly before entering the stadium. And then, you know, just we saw that there were limitations that this defense has, in my opinion, on the perimeter and at inside linebacker. And also we had a real tough time both maybe with scheme and with execution, which was a scary development on a primetime game against the Broncos, who, when locally they were trying to bill it as a potential Super Bowl matchup, but they really attacked us. They came out as the aggressor, and it was one of the more awkward games that I've been to in my life, in which, you know, it really never felt inside the stadium that the Packers were going to win the game, and I'm sure that came through the TV as well, but we just seemed outmatched almost from the kickoff. And that was a disappointing thing.
Are you worried as much as some people are about the Packers offense and the lack of the receivers' ability to get open?
You know, what was interesting to me is I was surprised that we ran so many slow developing routes. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the scheme piece that really, really frustrated me is we got away from the run early in the game, and we ran a lot of slow developing runs. I will say that, you know, it appeared to me that Jones and Adams just, they weren't open much on the outside. There was a crossing route or two that Adams was open on, but the middle of the field, Brian, was just wide open. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they were playing a single high safety, which they used to say you couldn't do against Rodgers. And Cobb really seemed like he could have had a big day. And, you know, we were sitting up pretty high where you can really get that all 22 view, and I don't have Ware and Miller attacking me from the edges, so I can see the field pretty well from there. But and I'm not worried about the pass rush. But it appeared as though the Packers, or the offensive line, did a decent job for the most part. And we just didn't look at the middle of the field, and it kind of goes back to, you know, we give all these kudos to, you know, the lack of interceptions that we throw, and a lot of it, they say, is that it's because the Packers don't throw the ball deep down the middle of the field late in the play design. But sometimes where the play is open, and if you look at the season as a whole, there's been a number of big plays that the Packers have had offensively that have come over the middle of the field, and it really seemed as though we just left everything between the hash marks just off the table when I thought that was there, and that crossing routes could have been big yards in abundance over the middle of the field on crossing routes, or just, I mean, Cobb was open a number of times, and frankly, he looked pretty frustrated at times as well that he wasn't being looked at. And to me, that was a glaring thing to witness firsthand, where you don't necessarily get to see that over, you know, through the television, but there were plays to be had. And I just think that, you know, because the Broncos had some success on in rushing the passer on occasion, and, you know, they've got such a great reputation for rushing the quarterback, I started to wonder if maybe we weren't looking at the defensive line rather than down the field as to where we could potentially strike a big play.
Yeah, I totally agree there. Just curious, what would you say the percentage of Packers fans was in the stadium? They, of course, have, you know, such a great, you know, tradition and reputation is traveling well, but I imagine, you know, was mostly Broncos fans that wanted to pack that stadium.
You know, I would have said initially I was thinking that it could have been almost a third of the stadium, but that might be a little rich. Could be. I would say I'd say roughly 25% of the stadium was Packer fans, and it was there were a couple of real fun "Go Pack, Go" chants that were echoing throughout the stadium during commercial breaks, where the team was really, or the crowd was really trying to get the team fired up, but it just wasn't our day. I would like to say, Brian, just to before we moved on, one thing that Packer fans have to remember is what a great time for a wake-up call. We all wanted this, right? We all wanted this win. We all wanted 7-0. It was on national TV. It was Sunday night. The Broncos came out in those ugly, 1997 Super Bowl jerseys that, you know, just makes you dislike the Donkeys even more. But we have to remember, this was an AFC game. It was a great time for a wake-up call. The entire nation saw it. I think it brought some of our limitations and our weaknesses to light, and it really gave a great opportunity for our coaching staff to go into the shed and try to make improvements here before what is an absolutely vital game here at Carolina, and what really will be, in my opinion, a defining moment of the 2015 football season this year. So all things considered, you're going to lose games. It may as well be against an AFC team. And frankly, I like that it's a humbling and humiliating loss on national TV, where this team has had a long, long, long history and tradition under Mike McCarthy of being able to rally in difficult times. And I think this weekend we're gonna see that once again, and everything's gonna be right once again in Packer Nation.
Yeah, wake-up calls are not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, there's once again, I feel like I have to remind people of this, and I probably shouldn't, but I mean, you know, teams don't go through seasons undefeated. They lose, and they still go on to win it all. So it happens. So after a loss, we want to see how this Packers team can get better. So we're going to give our quote-unquote fixes for the offense and the defense, and we're going to give three so-called fixes each here. Scott's going to focus on the defense. I'm going to focus on the offense. So, Scott, and we'll react to each other's here, but Scott, if you want to kick things off here, I mean, you've got a couple things here. If you were Dom Capers or Mike McCarthy or anybody on the – if you were a coach on the Packers, how would you go about, you know, kick-starting this defense and making it better?
The number one thing that I think the Packers need to improve on is play at inside linebacker. And Clay Matthews, first and foremost, is having just such a terrific year. And he showed up last week, and he showed up every week. And I think we need somebody who's going to be disciplined standing next to him. And if you look at 3-4 defenses throughout the league, and really throughout its history, teams that have run the 3-4 defense, they've been really strong up the middle, especially at inside linebacker. And Nate Palmer, to my eyes, does not look natural. He almost looks gullible in the run game, where they almost, you know, get him to commit or to overcommit, and it leaves the cutback wide open, and there's the cutback, and it's just, you know, it's big plays, and because of it, you know, C.J. Anderson carries the ball 14 times for over 100 yards when, you know, he's been averaging less than 4 yards a carry this year. And, you know, then the Broncos just consistently ran crossing routes right in front of his face, which was the frustrating thing. Is sometimes if you get behind you in a zone defense, you know, you get a crossing route behind you, I can understand getting beat. But when the play is happening right in front of you, and then you don't have the speed to catch an Owen Daniels who's, you know, had a history of being injured and is lengthy in his career. And, you know, I have all kinds of respect for Owen Daniels, but at this stage, you shouldn't be outrunning somebody on a crossing route. And that was happening. And I think that the Packers need to get somebody who's more natural there. And I'm not saying that Jake Ryan is, but it's time to see what we've got, Jake Ryan, in my opinion. We're not in a stage where we need to win a Super Bowl this year. And we're not in a stage where we can try to develop somebody in season at inside linebacker. Ryan doesn't have a rich history of playing at inside linebacker, but he at least had some exposure to it last year. And the Packers drafted him this year to be the guy to plug and play in case if Barrington were to get injured. So I'd love to see more Jake Ryan, less Palmer at inside linebacker. I think we get I think we were able to be more diversified there on a pass rush. I think we're going to be able to be more disciplined in the run game. And, you know, what little we've seen of Jake Ryan in the preseason and in special teams, when he hits you, you're going to the ground. And I think he'd bring a toughness and an intelligence to the middle of the defense that we're not seeing right now.
You know, I love it. I think Nate Palmer is the weakest link on the Packers defense. I'm not saying cut him. You know, if not, I think he's a fine backup, and if things don't work out, you go back to him and you kind of live with what he's got. And he kind of played okay the last game before the bye against the San Diego Chargers. If you get that kind of performance out of him, you can live with it. But I'm all about you know, giving Jake Ryan an opportunity. The last episode, I got so mad because we really reacted to a quote from Dom Capers in which he said it was, you know, when Sam Shields down, it was go with the most experienced group. And I don't like that mindset, because while a guy like Nate Palmer could be, he's been around the Packers organization now in his third year. You know, he's arguably no more experienced at inside linebacker than Jake Ryan. And you know what? Jake Ryan is almost undoubtedly, you know, maybe perhaps I would think the more natural player, because even though he was, you know, for a lot of his college career, he was an outside linebacker. It was an outside linebacker in a 4-3 defense. So he was a second level linebacker. That's not that big of a stretch. It's not like he was on the line of scrimmage like Nate Palmer was. Nate Palmer was your outside linebacker slash defensive end in college. So I think Jake Ryan is the more natural player, and I love it. I love it.
It's you know, it's funny, as you're seeing in light of what you just said, and that's such an astute point. And I think that when, you know, you and I will spend a lot of time this offseason talking about, you know, the NFL draft and you know, how people translate. But one of the biggest things that I've taken note is some of the best players playing inside linebacker, especially in a 3-4, they were outside linebackers or defensive ends, if you will, in a 4-3 defense where they're playing the second line. Mm-hmm. Where they weren't necessarily a three-four inside backer. And with that said, the way that Ryan was used in college, he was in an attacking position. Mm-hmm. So I think that it would really give great scheme diversity as far as, you know, pressuring the quarterback, and we're consistently seeing, you know, Matthews standing between the guard and the center and really trying to get a read on what's going on from the quarterback and trying to catch audibles, which is just a beautiful thing to see. And we just haven't seen that sort of inside linebacker play in Green Bay in recent memory. But if you were able to also put Ryan next to him to utilize some of his great strengths that he had at the college game to see if it could translate well into the NFL, I think it would be it would add a dimension to our defense that we're just not getting right now. And when Palmer has been trying to attack the line of scrimmage, frankly, he's been stood up. And, you know, something needs to change there, because it seems as though we're playing shorthanded.
You mind if I go here with the offense then?
Go ahead.
All right.
Go ahead.
So we're going to take turns here going from defense to offense and give three each here. But so my fix for the offense, the number one thing I think is going to help the Packers, and this is not an original idea. In fact, two episodes ago when we had Luke Rogers on the show, he kind of alluded to it. And then it probably got expanded by a great article written by Andy Benoit of Sports Illustrated's MMQB this week, who I think laid it out probably better than anybody else has. The Packers need to use, I think, more motion and bunch and stack formations. This is, you know, the criticism is Packers receivers can't get open. And maybe sometimes they were, and Aaron Rodgers just missed a few or things like that. But still, by and large, they weren't open. I think these are ways that the scheme, you can help as a coach to get the players open. You're running these rub routes, things like that. You're putting them in motion. You're motioning Cobb in and out of the backfield so defenses don't know how to guard him with a linebacker, with a cornerback, whatever. Or you stack them and they kind of, you know, crisscross and crossing routes and things like that. And a lot of what, you know, a lot of looks like the New England Patriots are known for. So I think the Packers got to get, you know, do more of that. Yeah, they do it once in a while, no doubt about it. I'm not saying they don't ever or anything like that, but I think they got to use it more often, especially when you don't have Jordy Nelson in the offense and they're really keying on Randall Cobb and things like that.
I really think it's a great point, and schematically it truly makes sense. One thing I will say about everybody saying the Packers wide receivers haven't been open, Aaron Rodgers has made a living on that back shoulder throw.
Yeah.
And he's really changed the way the NFL has played in some ways, but on his ability to do that. And, you know, that's a pass that's intended to throw it to the guy that's covered. And, you know, we've gotten away from that, it seems like, a bit this year. I'd like to see a little bit more of the back shoulder throw put into play and you know, for when these receivers are quote-unquote covered. And I could agree with you. You know, stacking the formations is a great way to add some disguise into some bring about difficulty as far as trying to match up. The one thing that concerns me about that is then, you know, you're putting the ball in the hands of the Justin Perillos and the John Coons of our team if a guy like Ty Montgomery is hurt, in my opinion. You know, Montgomery can be the guy that in a tight formation, he can move quick in space, similar to an Amendola or an Edelman can. And if you have both Montgomery and Cobb healthy and able to play at peak performance, I think that the stack formation with these scat type receivers can really add an interesting dimension. But if we're going to go big, you know, we aren't rolling out Gronkowski. we're rolling out Perillo. We're rolling out Kuhn, and we're rolling out Richard Rodgers, who I really like as a receiver, but boy, he leaves a lot to be desired as a blocker. So that is one thing to think about, the big plays that New England gets out of those formations. If we don't have Montgomery healthy, and I think a lot of it depends on who we're rolling out there to put in position to make plays.
Yeah. Go ahead, keep it up, Scott, with your number two fix for the Packers defense now.
You know, we've talked at length really since the draft as to who would be playing on the perimeter of the defense here at cornerback. And, you know, our depth really got exposed. And, you know, Casey Hayward, you know, I'm a big Casey Hayward fan. In my blog, I've really felt that I've been writing consistently that I felt that he was going to make a big play, a game-changing play for us soon. I really thought that it would come out of the slot where he'd, you know, we've been getting some decent pressure on the quarterback to where, you know, the ball would come out quick and he'd jump a route and return it for a pick six. When he's playing on the outside, he's just not cut out for it at the NFL level. And we are so thin from a depth perspective on the outside that I really want to see Gunter active. I want to see what he can do there if we're put in a pinch like we were last week. And as soon as Sam Shields went out, you know, we didn't have a chance. And we didn't even come close, really, it didn't seem like, to slow them down. And I know that we've been playing Goodson instead of him, and maybe that's a special teams thing. But for my opinion, Goodson's his need at as a gunner on special teams is almost nil now with the success that we've seen out of Giannis there. So he's less valuable as a gunner, and therefore to me he's less value, his roster spot is less valuable on the 53-man rotation. Gunter showed a lot at the college level as a guy that could turn and run on the perimeter. We've seen him do it very, very well in the preseason. He was arguably our best defensive back. And when you're playing a draft and develop, or when you, your intent to build a roster is draft and develop, I think we need to get Gunter on the field if we're put in that sort of a pinch. How much of a difference would it have made last week? I'm not sure. But I do know that had we kept Hayward in the slot, and we got beat on a lot of crossing routes last week, I think we could have had more success there, and things couldn't have been worse on the outside. So, you know, I guess I'm making a push for, you know, Gunter active over over Goodson, and having Gunter be our third cornerback on the outside if needed. And I really think that the depth at perimeter cornerback on the game day or the active game day roster is an important element to how we strategize moving forward.
I'm right there with you in that, you know, the Packers seem to be lacking at depth at the perimeter cornerback, as they seem to have a bunch of slot types on their roster and not so many that are as great on the outside. But throw this back at you here, though. I'm all about giving Gunter a chance because, I mean, how good he looked in the preseason was when he went up toe-to-toe with Antonio Brown of the Pittsburgh Steelers, I thought was kind of the highlight of his preseason. Be able to do that well showed, I think, he deserves more of a chance. But what about Dimitri Goodson in that he actually looked pretty good when he got his chance this past week? He actually had one nice pass breakup, and I'm not sure if any passes were completed on him. How do you respond to that?
You know, he did make a play, and there's no doubt. But I believe that that's the first time we've seen him make a play in the 2 years that he's been around, and in the preseason, from when we've seen him in high action, he has not been the type of guy that I would want to trust out there on the outside. There's no doubt about that, and I think that for the future of this team and the way that we're looking, I do not see Goodson as a guy that's going to be able to grow and develop at this stage. So, yes, he made a play. There's no doubt about it. But I just think that with the way we're structured and what the depth of our defense looks like in the secondary, at cornerback, and people who have a history on the outside, I think that Gunter is a guy that we need to have active on game day.
If you don't mind, I'll take over here with the number two fix on the Packers offense. What I'd like to see from the Packers offense, in addition to the previous suggestion, but more formations with three wide receivers and two running backs, and that, of course, means a fullback on the field, so as to utilize either John Kuhn or Aaron Ripkowski more often. And I don't know if the Packers are finally kind of transitioning here to the handing of the torch here to Aaron Ripkowski. He actually saw some meaningful snaps this past game, albeit just a handful of them. But that might have been his first time working with Aaron Rodgers, I think, in the first-string offense on the field. But I think, you know, this is an attempt a little bit to jump-start the running game. And, of course, the negative side of this is having to keep a fullback on the field when you're running your, no-huddle offense. But you know what? They've done that before with John Kuhn, and they can do it again. And you kind of saw the Packers do this last year a little bit. They didn't use John Kuhn a whole lot early in the season, but then as the weather turned colder, things like that, they started to use him more often. And, you've seen Eddie Lacy kind of be this guy who just gets better as the season goes along, and maybe that's what the Packers will be doing now. But I know, Richard Rodgers, he isn't offering that much right now. So at the very least, I think you're getting a better run blocker on the field when you're using John Kuhn or a fullback more often. So I'd like to see that a little bit more.
I love it, Brian. And one of the biggest things is just from a blocking perspective, Rodgers has not added anything. And, I'm not jumping off the Rodgers bridge because, frankly, I like him as a receiver. He's got great hands and he presents a target, for the MVP. But with that said, the Packers need to find ways to string drives together. If you're not getting first downs in the no huddle, well, then you never get any rhythm. And I think the biggest thing that's missing is those 5 to 8 yard chunk plays. We're not getting them anymore. It seems like everything's either a 2 yard play or a 15 yard play. And we're not seeing second and four like we used to.
Yep.
And getting the ball to Kuhn in the flat, I turn back to that 3rd and 2 play against San Diego on the crucial drive when we're equal at 17 and, they ended up throwing the ball to Kuhn in the flat for a first down and picked up double-digit yards.
Mm-hmm.
I really think utilizing him on a dump down, and there's no reason Kuhn doesn't catch 20 balls this year.
Yeah, he's a reliable receiver. He's not elusive, but he's reliable.
Exactly. And we're not necessarily looking for 10 to 15 yards every play. You know, if you can get yards in 5 or 6, get them in bunches. And, shorten the down and distance. There's too many times it seems like it's 3rd and long. And, I just think that, yes, it would help out in the blocking game, but he'd also be just a dependable guy as far as, the dump off to just make sure that we're consistently picking up yardage and getting in a rhythm. And that for me has been one of the biggest differences this year compared to last year's is, that 5 to 8 yard play just hasn't seemed to happen. And therefore we've just been having having difficulty getting in an offensive rhythm. And because of it, we're seeing more 3 and outs this year than, boy, it seems like we've had since 2010 combined. And, when Rodgers has been the quarterback at least. So, I'm fully on board there. I'd like to see Kuhn catching the ball 1 to 2 times a game. And, not necessarily that he's the big playmaker, mm-hmm. but just to keep the chains going. And then additionally, if I may, one of the pieces, Brian, that is really, really, really frustrating, and you saw it a couple of times in the game, was Aaron Rodgers was calling out the blitz. And we didn't even pick it up. And it came exactly where he signaled. And that, I mean, it was so apparent. You know, he's sitting there pointing it out. And, you know, Lacy has been a real strong pass blocker throughout his short career with us. But you added Kuhn there as well, who Rodgers has oftentimes said is the only guy in the locker room that he believes knows the offense at the level that he knows. And I think that from an intelligence and in perspective in pass pro, that would be another added bonus.
And perhaps a topic for the off season here, but I'll just make mention of it, but not go into any detail because we mentioned Richard Rodgers before. If he's not offering anything as a blocker, why is he 270 pounds? Like, he is big. He is so big. And, I just think maybe dropping some weight may help him be a better receiver, which is where his strength lies anyway. Anyway, we'll get into that more in the offseason. But Scott, your third and final fix for the Packers defense.
I'd like to see more Jayron Elliott as a pass rusher on third down. He seems like, schematically, when he's been on the field, he hasn't been coming on a speed rush. And I'd like to see him come from the right side of the field, where it may open up the B gap a little bit, gets the tackle up the field. So if the quarterback is going to try to get out of the pocket, he's rolling to his left rather than his right. And in reality, Cam Newton is a mobile quarterback. We got Teddy Bridgewater coming up, who's a mobile quarterback. And we got him twice here in the near future. But, what I would like to see is more of Elliott coming on a speed rush rather than sort of that contain rush that he's been on, because that's not his greatest asset. I think when we've seen Elliott do real well has been when he's tried to turn the corner. We saw that, we've seen that the preseason throughout, and we saw some against Tampa Bay last year as well in the regular season. And, behind that, to cover that B gap, I'd like to see either, Ryan or Matthews fill in that gap on a stunt blitz from the inside and just a way to be able to continue to put, to bring pressure to the quarterback. I know that the Packers have had statistically great success as far as sacks are concerned. With that said, the last 2 weeks, we haven't really put a ton of pressure on the quarterback. I know we had, I think, 3 sacks against San Diego, and Joe Thomas missed another one that should have been a laydown 4th. But other than those 4 plays, there was literally no pressure at all. And just thinking of an additional creative way to try to utilize who we've got on the roster to their strengths, I'd like to see some of that speed rush from Elliott. And additionally, if he's not going to get home, he's got such long arms that, you know, I'd like to see him swinging at that ball to try and create turnovers. One thing that the defense hasn't done is we haven't been able to get to the quarterback in a fashion that has been forcing turnovers, as far as the strip is concerned. And I do think that sometimes that speed rush, where you're coming from the blind side, it can lead to big plays, and I think Elliott might be able to offer that dimension for us.
I'm not sure if I'm playing devil's advocate here or just making an excuse for J. Rohn. It's not even making an excuse, but J. Rohn Elliott, if you look at the snap counts, he is the leader in special teams snap counts every game. He plays on every unit, and I'm sure he's busting his ass out there all the time. And I wonder if sometimes his lack of production is he's tired because he's out there freaking covering kicks and punts, and he's running more than any other player on the entire roster. I do wonder if there's an effect with that.
Could be the case, but I also wonder if they're not using him right. If they're using him in the wrong way, where, you know, sometimes – you see him on a second down play where he's out there trying to stop the run, and he's actually done a decent job, I feel like, chasing down plays from the backside this year. But extending plays to the sideline isn't his greatest strength, I don't think. His best asset has been his speed rush, and that's where, you know, he's been having you fist pumping as a fan during the preseason, where it's like, boy, we may really have something there. Yeah. Where when it's going to be just extending your arms and trying to extend the play, you know, I think that, you know, we got other players on the team, and Malumba and Peppers and Neo, and even I think Perry does a better job of that than Elliott. So, you know, I the Packers need to continue to find ways to get to the quarterback, and you know, I think if they came with Perry and Elliott on the outside on third downs with Jones and Peppers on the inside, I just have to believe that, you know, we'd be getting home more often than not, or at least disrupting the view of the quarterback more often than not, especially if you're adding either Clay or somebody like Thomas or Ryan on a stunt blitz from the inside as well.
I'm there with you. The third and final fix for the Packers offense here. I was disappointed to see, coming off that last game against the San Diego Chargers, where he finally became involved in a regular season game, I was disappointed to see Jeff Janis go back to the role of being invisible, not even getting a chance. And again, I'm not the kind of guy who wants Jeff Janis out there every single play, but I just think he needs to be involved in some point. I mean, because it's now getting to the point he's proved himself all the time in the preseason. He's finally proved himself in the regular season as of the Chargers game. It's time to get him a role somehow on this Packers offense. And I don't know, you know, do you follow Jeff Janis on Twitter, Scott?
I can't say that I do.
Okay, so Jeff, this is interesting. Jeff Janis, if you follow him on Twitter, he is the biggest hunter in the world. He posts all these things about bow hunting, about turkey hunting, you know, camouflage and whatever. And it's amazing how big he is into this. This is not a small part of his life. This is
you know, outside of football, this is the major thing in his life is hunting. And I wonder sometimes if maybe that doesn't mesh well with Aaron Rodgers, who owns a record label and has a Hollywood girlfriend, and they're not exactly, you know, the types that exactly get along. I don't know if I can't say, but it almost seems as if there's liberal, there's conservative, and I wonder, and I have no proof for this, but I wonder if there's some kind of disconnect there that could keep this from being, you know, more than it is.
You know, there's clearly something that's going on there between Rodgers. Just, you know, sometimes perception is reality, and for what meets the eye, there seems like there's just a natural frustration between Rodgers and Janis. And I'm going to say one thing that I saw at the stadium that was fairly interesting for my eye that you don't see on TV. But when the Packers' defense was on the field, Jeff Janis was the biggest cheerleader out there. He was on the sideline. He was pumping his fist. He was, you know, waving his arms in the air, trying to get what was there of the Packers' faithful in the stands up, you know, off their butts and on their feet to try and make some noise. And, you know, he wants to win. He wants an opportunity. And it was funny because I really felt like, you know, maybe there was a turning point in the Janis-Rodgers relationship. You know, on that broken play where Rodgers sort of shoveled it to Janis and Janis sprinted down the field and it looked like Rodgers was, you know, huffing and puffing behind him to be wanting to be the first person to congratulate him on a big play. Mm-hmm. And then right after it, Rodgers went to Janis on a crucial third down and Janis drew the flag. And it was like, hey, maybe this is the turning point that all the fans have wanted.
Yep.
You know, what's interesting is, and you bring up an interesting point about the personalities, because something is there and I don't know what it is. I know Rodgers has been vocal in the past saying that he doesn't know that Janis is essentially, you know, doing his homework in the study room, if you will, and that, it, you know, inside, you know, on Tuesday to Thursday, he's not coming across as the sharpest tool in the shed. That seems to irritate Rodgers. But I'm not the guy either that's claiming that Janis needs to get 8 targets a game. Mm-hmm. But there's no reason he's not getting 3 or 4. Yeah. And, you know, I think this is a pretty good transition to the Carolina game. But one of the things that needs to happen this week is, you know, Charles Tillman has been a superstar cornerback throughout his career. But if you watched any of that Indianapolis game, Indianapolis clearly had it in its play design to attack Tillman deep. And they had, I think it was Moncrief, had steps on Tillman multiple times. And when Roman Harper was coming over from a single high safety, he was oftentimes late. And the play was there. And either Luck just slightly underthrew a pass or, you know, Moncrief just didn't finish the play. Jeff Janis is that guy for us. And we need to make sure that I'm saying more than once, we need to make sure that Janis is targeted deep and in coverage or when he's in one-on-one coverage against Tillman on the outside, because Tillman can't run with him. And at some point, the Packers need to come up with a big play. And it needs to be on, you know, deep down the field and move in the pocket as we've seen them do so many times throughout the years previously in a Mike McCarthy-designed offense. And there's no doubt, for my eye anyways, that Jeff Janis is the best option we have to run that route.
Scott, we're running out of time here. Before, you know, I can give my prediction after you take off, but do you got a prediction for the game, and what do you think is going to happen?
I think that the Packers are going to come out and surprise some people. And, you know, I think this could be a fairly convincing win for the Packers. I think that we match up well with them. And, you know, I see the Packers coming out and trying to establish a run game early and sticking with it. You know, we had some success in the first couple of plays, you know, at Denver last week, and then we got away with it, away from it. And I really think that the Packers are going to come out and run the football early, going to see some moderate success, but they're going to stick with it. And even if it's the type of game where Lacy has, you know, 20 carries for 70 yards, but the Packers are keeping the Panthers honest there.
Yep.
And because of it, they're going to be able to come to some play action, And even if it's the short play action and the quick 8-yard hit to Cobb to continue to move sticks, and then it'll open up a big play down the sidelines. And you know, I'm thinking it might be Jameis this week. I really am. And, you know, I think the defense is going to come out. I think we match up well with them. And what I mean there is the Panthers, you know, they aren't going to take advantage of us on the perimeter the way that, you know, the Chargers and the Broncos did the last 2 weeks. They don't have the wide receiver options. So I think that we'll be able to slow them down to a degree. I think we're going to see us come up with a beefy formation on the defensive line to slow down the run. And I'm going to say the Packers come away with a win, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's a 2-score victory, something along the lines of 27-16.
Sounds good to me, man. Thank you, Scott, so much for joining us. Appreciate your insight as always. Enjoy the game this weekend. And we'll be talking to you, I guess, what, post-Thanksgiving. Packers got a stretch there where they're going to play 2 Thursday games in a row, and then we'll be talking to you in early December then.
Looking forward to it. Go Pack, go, Brian.
All right. Take care. Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog joining us here on Railbird Central on a Friday morning. Joining us as he does the first Friday of every month. Again, these monthly guests. We got Scott the first Friday of every month. Now we got Luke Rogers the first Monday of every month. Great to get these guys in their perspective on the show. But so my 2 cents here. I see this game going one of two ways. And one way I could see it is if I take it back in time, and not even that far ago, 2012 season, I believe the Packers they faced the Indianapolis Colts on the road, and they lost in 2012. And I think that record dropped them to 2-3 on the season. So I think they had a losing record at the point, if I remember correctly, but regardless, I know for sure they came back the next week and had a second consecutive road game on the road at the Houston Texans. And that game was nationally televised. I think it was a Sunday night football game, you know, going to play against J.J. Watt and a lot of attention there. And the Packers just beat the heck out of them, just kicked them to the curb, and they won by 20 some points or something like that, and maybe it was only 18, but it was a convincing victory. And I think the Texans, in fact, got some late scores, might have got back into it late, but it was a resounding victory for the Green Bay Packers. And that may happen against the Carolina Panthers here, but I do think this Carolina Panthers team is a lot better than the 2012 Houston Texans. And I'm glad we got Scott McKenna on the show, who gave you a Packers victory. And I know this is a Packers podcast, but, and I'm sorry for this, folks, and I'm not doing this for the sake of attention or anything like that. I'm predicting a Packers loss for the second week in a row. And you know what? I predicted Packers loss last week, and it happened. So give me the benefit of the doubt here that I actually know what I'm talking about once in a while. I don't, and more than anything, here's the big picture, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but I think the Packers can lose 2 consecutive games, and I think they could, in fact, go undefeated the rest of the way and finish with a 14-2 record. So, you know, I mean, obviously, I'm not predicting that right now because, you know, I want to see how things play out. I mean, things could, you know, go terribly bad, and I hope they don't. But I don't like going on the road to play the Carolina Panthers, because I think the Carolina Panthers are pretty darn good. And what scares me more than anything, and I kind of stealing this from the guest on our last show, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com, but I focused on it a little more, researched a little more. I wrote an article on it yesterday at 24/7 Sports. What scares me about the Panthers' defense is they got all-pro caliber players at each level of the defense. Kawan Short on the defensive line, Luke Kuechly at linebacker, Josh Norman at cornerback, and now add in some pretty good role players like Thomas Davis at linebacker, Charles Tillman at secondary, and yeah, it's not the Charles Tillman of old, but for secondary, for role players, those are some pretty good complementary pieces if you're the Carolina Panthers. I think they're going to be hyped at home. I think the Panthers' offense can be dangerous on the ground when you consider what Cam Newton can do as a runner in addition to Jonathan Stewart. And it's like Jonathan Stewart, he's like one of those guys you want on your fantasy football team. He's not among the best running backs in the NFL, and he hasn't been for a while. Maybe he was when he was younger in his career, but he's one of those guys who's been around for a while, the starting running back in Carolina, and you can always count on him for kind of being a dependable kind of guy. And I, you know, I think they got that, and they got one of the best tight ends in the NFL with Greg Olsen. And the receiving core is not scary for you know, Carolina, but they can make things happen with Olsen and some young guys, and they've definitely improved on the offensive line. It was terrible like a year or two ago, but they've made improvements there. And I, you know, I'm predicting a close one, but a 28-27 Packers loss to the Carolina Panthers. So I'm talking a 1-point margin here. So I mean, this could definitely hinge on a field goal, and I'm not going to be surprised if the Packers win. And like I said, it could very well be a situation where it's like the Houston Texans game of 2012, where they come off a loss and absolutely beat them up. It could happen that way, but I think this Carolina Panthers game team is very good. And like I said, I think the Packers can go on. They're going to go on a roll after this. Regardless of what happens, I think, boy, they got the schedule sets up rather nicely coming up against the next game, a Detroit Lions team that's absolutely reeling right now after yesterday's the loss of or firing of the general manager. We'll get into that. I might as well get into it right now. So I'm predicting Packers loss. I'm sorry. I hope I'm wrong. But continuing with the rest of the show, and we'll keep this brief because we've already been going for 45 minutes or so.
Packers news of the day.
Yesterday, in Packers news, and I will call this Packers-related news, the Lions fire general manager Martin Mayhew and president Tom Lewand. Kind of rocked the NFL world yesterday coming at midseason, and they've made other changes there on the, you know, they fired Joe Lombardi earlier, you know, the week previous. So there's kind of, you know, been change going on in Detroit. But to make it Packers related here, and more than just, you know, within the NFC North or within the division, Elliot Wolf's name has emerged as a candidate, including by Michael Rothstein of ESPN, which I think is kind of, you know, when an outlet like ESPN says this, people start to listen. It kind of makes sense to me in a couple ways that his name would be a viable candidate despite being 33 years old. Just look what the Milwaukee Brewers just did. The Milwaukee Brewers just hired a 30-year-old general manager. There's kind of this growing acceptance in professional sports, I think, of young people in executive positions that, you know, maybe understand the analytics of the game a little bit better. And I think that's a good thing, because I'm not about discriminating because of age. I have nothing wrong with hiring somebody who's 60 years old. But I just think, you know, you hire the best candidate. And I don't know if Elliot Wolf's the best candidate or not. I mean, these are things that come out over the course of an interview. But I can understand how he would be, you know, a candidate, or his name would be thrown out there. He, of course, has the bloodlines. He's the son of Ron Wolf, who's now enshrined in the Hall of Fame. And I think Elliot Wolf got some attention league-wide because he presented him this past year. So, and that's great. I mean, they're both deserving of the attention. Of course, you know, Ron Wolf for getting, you know, his bust in the Hall of Fame. I don't think it's going to happen, though. I just think, you know, Elliot Wolf is 33 years old, and he was just promoted by the Packers this past January to his current position, and which I believe is director of player personnel.
And I just think, you know, it would behoove Elliott Wolf to continue to grow in that position beyond 1 year. Even if he is courted for the job by the Lions, he might be in a better position just to accept it and continue to learn and grow in his current role and bide his time, because by the time current Packers general manager Ted Thompson retires, Elliott Wolf may be the successor. And I'm not guaranteeing that by any means, because there's a couple other in-house candidates too that may be considered for the job, Alonzo Highsmith and Brian Gutekunst. And that's not to mention those outside the organization who might be considered for the job, like Schneider out in Seattle, Reggie McKenzie in Oakland. So there is no shortage of candidates out there who may be interested in becoming the next Packers general manager. But regardless, I think it's, you know, Elliott Wolf is young enough yet to be a little bit picky. It could be tough because, you know, the Packers organization has been successful and you want to, like, capitalize on that success. You know, if all of a sudden they come off a season with a losing record, and I hope that never happens, but if it did, you know, all of a sudden Elliott Wolf's stock might plummet for no fault of his own, but just that people would be reluctant to hire somebody, you know, coming off a poor season. So you could understand how he might want to capitalize on that, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think he's going to stay in his current position. Even if he's offered it, I think he may decline. Stay somewhere there's a little more organizational stability as well. Boy, that'd be a real tough job to you got to hire your own people, and you know how many people are really going to work under, or you know, going to be willing to want to work under a 33-year-old general manager. That would be tough. That would be tough. So I'm sure Packers fans are happy that here you go. Here's the, I predicted Packers loss. I'm also predicting Elliott Wolf stays with the organization. So feel good about that prediction. But finally here.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Friday, the thing to look forward to today is the Packers release their final injury report of the week. And I think people are waiting to see the status of cornerback Sam Shields, who has not practiced yet this week. He, of course, suffered the shoulder injury in the Broncos game, exited, did not return, and he has, you know, yet to come back from that injury. So could it be a situation where the Packers are, you know, just preserving his health and waiting and seeing if he's, you know, why risk it now? Let's wait and let's see if he plays on Sunday. Could be. But regardless, with the release of the final injury report of the week on Friday, they have the game day status projection. So they'll put next to his Shields name, you know, out, doubtful, questionable, or probable. So waiting to see that along with several others. I know Quentin Rollins, fellow cornerback, is in the same boat. He hasn't practiced this week. People also very interested in seeing Ty Montgomery, seeing as he didn't play in the last game. And where is he now? Good news, looks like Clay Matthews is going to be okay. So I expect him to be probable, but even more so some of these guys who a little bit where their status is a little more up in the air. So looking forward to that. But that'll do it for today's show, folks. Everybody, thank you so much for joining me at 9:30 a.m. Central Time. If you're listening to the live edition of the show, Mike McCarthy's press conference is happening. So going right from here to there. To find out what McCarthy has to say. But we'll see you later, folks. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the game. I'm hoping for a Packers victory. Hope we're breaking that down on Monday. So we'll talk to you then, folks. We'll see you later. My call to action, if you've not done so already, one small thing we ask: the show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. Please give us a rating on iTunes, a rating, a brief review. We'd love it if you did. That's all we ask in return. So enjoy the game, folks. I leave you today with a song called Tinderbox by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go, Pack, go.